a sports broadcaster from Hoboken, New Jersey, named Francis Albert Sinatra? Well, that's our focus this week on Echoes of a Century. I'm King David McKenzie.
With a joy I'd never seen, and the air was such a wonder, from the hot dogs and the beer. Yes, there used to be a ballpark right here. And there used to be rock candy and a great big 4th of July, with the fireworks exploding all across the summer sky, and the people watched in wonder how they laugh and how they cheer. And there used to be a ballpark right here. Now the children try to find it, and they can't believe their eyes, 'cause the old team just isn't playing, and the new team hardly tries. And the sky has got so cloudy, when it used to be so clear, and the summer went so quickly this year. Yes, there used to be a ballpark right here.
Frank Sinatra, with his marvelous 1973 recording of the Joe Raposo baseball memoir, There Used to Be a Ballpark. Frank Sinatra had a couple more connections to baseball early on in his career. One is his starring role as second baseman Dennis Ryan of the Wolves, a team that only existed on the MGM movie lot in Culver City, California, in the 1949 Busby Berkeley musical Take Me Out to the Ball Game. And then there was his occasional gig as a sportscaster for NBC Radio. Don't worry if you never heard about that part of Sinatra's showbiz career, because you're not alone. The big sports name on the NBC roster was a man named Bill Stern, who indeed was a fine play-by-play announcer for football, baseball, and boxing events on NBC. He was the first announcer ever to make a broadcast from the site of a football game over Rochester, New York station WHAM in 1925. He also was the first announcer to cover a Major League Baseball game on television. Partly as a result of a hideous car crash in 1935 in which he lost part of one leg, Stern eventually added a Friday night feature program on NBC in which he told stories about sports. A majority of the stories were true, some were partly true and partly apocryphal, and others were downright tall tales. But they were all fascinating yarns that built their own audience for Stern in the 30s and 40s. During the summer, when he took his annual vacation from his NBC post, Stern would call upon several of his friends to do the Friday night yarn spinning in his absence. On at least three occasions, August 1, 1947, July 9, 1948, and July 15, 1949, Stern asked Frank Sinatra to sit in. Sinatra loved the tales that he now had a chance to tell, and these programs came up during a relative ebb in Sinatra's recording career, allowing for the broadcasts to plug his latest movie on the side. In fact, on one of these broadcasts, you will hear Frank get in a mention, as well as a line or two, of Take Me Out to the Ball Game. So let's travel back to a hot August night in 1947, and then a couple of hot July nights in subsequent years, to hear Frank Sinatra, sportscaster.
C-O-L-G-A-T-E. Colgate presents the Bill Stern Show, starring Frank Sinatra.
Bill Stern, the Colgate safety man, is far away. This week is his vacation time to rest and play. And for tonight, while he's away to take his place, we're glad to say that Frank Sinatra will be here.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Bill Stern is away on his vacation, but in his place tonight, Colgate Shave Cream is proud to present Frank Sinatra. And in order to keep this show just like Bill Stern's regular program, tonight Frank Sinatra will tell sports stories that are taken from Bill Stern's popular book entitled My Favorite Sports Stories. So here we go. Frank Sinatra pinch-hitting for Bill Stern with sports stories from Bill's book. Ladies and gentlemen, Frank Sinatra.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You know, listening to Bill Stern each Friday night, I heard him tell some strange stories, but none stranger than the one I'm about to tell now. This is a swimming story. It's the story of Charles Zimmy. But oddly enough, this didn't begin as a story of a swimmer, because in the beginning, Charles Zimmy was just a young fellow who wanted more than anything else in the world to become a great athlete. Charles Zimmy was rugged and healthy, but unfortunately was clumsy in sports. He was so clumsy on the baseball diamond that he became the laughingstock of all other youngsters when he tried to play ball. It was the same on the football field and on the basketball court. Charles Zimmy, it seemed, wasn't destined to become a great athlete. And then one day it happened. Charles Zimmy was injured, seriously injured in an accident. For a time, doctors despaired of saving his life. But medical skill won out and Charles Zimmy pulled through. And now more than ever, he vowed he would become a great athlete, even though his friends continued to believe that he just wasn't cut out to make a name for himself in sports. But Charles Zimmy wasn't discouraged. No, sir, he became a swimmer and, surprisingly enough, a very good swimmer. But he wanted to become more than a good swimmer. He wanted to be great, to perform a feat which would forever underline his name among America's sports heroes. One day, the sports pages of America carried the startling story that this unknown swimmer had established an endurance record by swimming 81 hours. A year later, he set a new record at Honolulu by swimming 100 hours. Charles Zimmy now was famous for his swimming feats, but he still yearned to perform one feat which would enshrine his name above all others. It was Zimmy's ambition to swim further than any man alive. To accomplish this, he announced he would attempt to swim the Hudson River from Albany to New York City. His friends tried to dissuade Charles Zimmy from this incredible and fantastic attempt, but Zimmy would not hear of it. And so one morning, while thousands lined the banks of the mighty Hudson, Charles Zimmy entered the water at Albany to begin the long swim down the Hudson to New York City. And to the amazement of the world, Charles Zimmy completed the grueling endurance swim from Albany to New York, a distance of 150 miles. And so this man, who had been a failure at all other sports, became world famous as the greatest long-distance swimmer in America. His failure in other sports had only served to spur him on. That's all there is to the story, except that maybe you'd like to know that Charles Zimmy, who swam from Albany to New York City, a distance of 150 miles, did it despite the fact that he had no legs.
Frank Sinatra will be back with other stories in just a moment. In the meantime, may I tell you about a certain baseball star known as one of the best infielders in the National League. He was on the All-Star team for 4 years, which is one reason Stan Hack stays high in favor with the fans. And Colgate Brushless Shave Cream stays in high favor with Stan Hack. Here's what he recently wrote, Bill Stern.
Dear Bill, sure I like a light, fluffy shave cream, but one that really does the work. And it's a pleasure to tell you that Colgate Brushless Shave Cream performs perfectly for me. Yes, sir, Bill, Colgate Brushless tames my wire whiskers in nothing flat. I can give myself a fast, close shave, and it's painless. You've got a life customer in me for Colgate Brushless Shave Cream, signed Stan Hack.
Stan Hack is one of the many champs who go all out for Colgate Brushless, the shave cream of champions. This light, fluffy cream is made specially for fellas who have tough whiskers planted in a tender skin. Colgate Brushless Shave Cream is not greasy, not heavy. It's light and ripe. It keeps your whiskers upright so your razor glides through, doesn't slide over them. And Colgate Brushless stays moist and active, works with your razor, conditions your skin for a smooth, clean shave without a pull or a snag. Also, because it's light and fluffy, not greasy or heavy, Colgate Brushless Shave Cream rinses off in a flash. And if you don't find Colgate Brushless, the shave cream of champions, does all this, send the top of the carton to Bill Stern, care of Colgate, Jersey City, Zone 2, New Jersey, and you'll get double your money back. Ask for Colgate Brushless Shave Cream tonight. It's light and it's right. Frank Sinatra, who's pinch-hitting for Bill Stern. Frank Sinatra.
In the world of sports, some men achieve fame in spite of all handicaps, while some ignore fame, even though it's theirs for the asking. This is a story of baseball heroes who might have been, if fate had not twisted their lives into strange channels. Many years ago, there popped up in the Bush Leagues a youngster by the name of Wilson. He hooked up with the Junction City team, a Class D club in the old Central Kansas League. As an outfielder, that boy with the contagious grin was an exceptional ball player. He was a hard hitter, and he had a powerful throwing arm, and in the outfield, he was a fly hawk. And that outfielder named Wilson began to blaze a trail in the Bush Leagues like a Kansas prairie fire. Before he had been many days with the Junction City team, he had become recognized as just about the best outfielder in the league. Outfielder Wilson looked like a player who couldn't miss making the big leagues. But after Wilson had played only 14 games, he went to the manager of the team and told him that he was quitting professional baseball. The manager coaxed and pleaded with the boy to remain in baseball, but young Wilson refused and left the team. In a few weeks, the incident died down and the ball player named Wilson was completely forgotten. No one again ever heard of that ball player named Wilson. However, if that baseball player from long ago missed out on the baseball glory, he found fame nevertheless. Because in time, he became the most famous general in American history. For all the world knows this baseball hero who might have been, as General Dwight Eisenhower. But there's another strange story of a baseball hero who might have been. Back in 1881, the famed Cincinnati Red Sox found an unknown young pitcher who could throw a ball faster than any man alive. So said the baseball scout who found him in Boston. Well, sir, that Boston Husky youngster was quickly signed up by Cincinnati. However, before that boy pitcher had hurled his first ball in the big league game, he suddenly disappeared. A frantic search was made for him, and finally the baseball scout found him hiding on a farm in Mississippi.
Hey, what's the big idea of coming all the way down here to Mississippi? You're supposed to be in Cincinnati, ready to pitch.
I'm not going to pitch anymore.
Are you crazy? You're tossing away a great career. Come on, get packed. I'll take you back with me.
I told you I ain't going back. I'm not going to play baseball anymore. I'd rather be a prize fighter. That's right. You heard me. A prize fighter.
And that youngster never did go back to baseball. He deserted a career that might have made him one of the most famous ball players of his day. Not that I think he was ever sorry, because as a prize fighter, he earned over $1 million and became the heavyweight champion of the world, ever to be remembered as the immortal John L. Sullivan. But if one ball player gave up baseball fame to become the most famous general in American history and another ball player gave up diamond fame to become the heavyweight champion of the world, there is still another strange story of a boy who lived in a small town in the Midwest. More than anything else in the world, that boy wanted to become a baseball player. But he was given little opportunity to play ball because whenever ball players were chosen for the game, he was always the one to be left out. You see, he had weak eyes, and he was forced to wear thick glasses to be able to see well. However, that boy with the weak eyes refused to give up. So whenever there was a baseball game, he was always around ready to play and to make him happy and make him feel that he was part of the ball game his playmates generally made him the umpire. And that boy made a lot of decisions, important decisions to his teammates. Strangely enough, that ball player who might have been is still making mighty important decisions, but on a much larger scale, because he became the president of the United States, Harry S. Truman. And that's the story of three men whose great names have been their own monuments in sports in particular and the world in general. But there have been nameless men who, curiously enough, have left behind them stories that burn in memory. Now I'd like to tell you the story of one such nameless man. He was a Frenchman. His destiny was not to leave behind an imperishable sports story. Rather, he left behind a letter. A letter he wrote before he was about to die. It's a letter that I sincerely believe should be read and reread at frequent intervals, as long as there are men left to carry on the battle for a decent world of freedom, a world free of war, and man's brutality to man. This letter I'm about to read was found on the body of a dead man in France when the Nazis occupied Paris during the last World War. Undoubtedly, he had a name, but his name doesn't matter. All that matters is the letter found on his lifeless body. It was a letter he wrote to his wife, and it read, "Dear Marie, this letter may never reach you, for in another hour I will die. It is the will of the Germans who have become masters of our land. I am but one of 18 men to be shot in an hour. My crime was in being a Frenchman, walking the streets of Paris as would a free man, and playing the American game called baseball. Strange that an American game like baseball should be the reason a Frenchman has to die. But this apparently is a strange world we are now living in. This morning I left our home as usual, and you were still asleep. Little did I know that I would never see you again. Before I left, I played with the baby, and then I went to work. The morning passed as other mornings had since the German occupation. But at noon, the day was so lovely and the sun was so warm that some of us at the factory decided to spend our noonday meal hour playing that American game called baseball. Perhaps we played no more than 20 minutes when suddenly the Germans came. We were arrested by the Gestapo and taken to the police station for questioning. We offered no resistance, but came peacefully. At the police station, we were treated in the usual Nazi manner by being brutally beaten. Then they told us that we were hostages and must die in an hour because the night before, a German soldier had been wounded. So in reprisal, 18 of us Frenchmen ought to be shot. There was no trial. We happened to be just 18 young men playing a sports game when arrested as hostages for a crime none of us committed. I wonder what Americans would think if they knew what a price some of us Frenchmen are paying to play the American game of baseball. Marie, my darling, I implore you to keep up your courage. You are the mother of my child. It will now be up to you to see that our baby leads the honest, decent, and free life I would have wished for him. In years to come, when the horror of this war is over, tell him the truth. Not that he may hate, but that someday he may understand. And to my son, who is too little to understand this horror, I ask only that when you grow up, you give your mother the love I would have, had I been here to do so. The end is coming now. Ironically enough, they are mocking us even in death. For the gods have told us that we ought to be shot on the very baseball field where we were caught and arrested. We cannot even die decently like men. With my last free breath, I shall utter your name. This was the letter found on the lifeless body of a Frenchman one day during the German occupation of France. The war is over now, and man's memory is short. Throughout the world, there is still bloodshed, and in many parts of the world, freedom is still nothing but a word, and man's brutality to man is still the horror of this earth. Perhaps that's why I chose the story of a nameless Frenchman who left behind not a great sports story, but just a letter he wrote before he died. A letter to burn in the memory of man and his conquest for freedom and a decent world to live in.
Frank Sinatra will be back in just a moment. But you know, whenever I hear a fella griping about his tough beard and tender skin, well, I know I've got a customer for Colgate Brushless Shave Cream. Not greasy, not heavy. Colgate Brushless Shave Cream is light and it's right. You get perfect performance with Colgate Brushless. It holds your whiskers up so your razor glides through, not over them. No snagging or pulling. And Colgate Brushless Shave Cream keeps moist and active clear through your shave. Then Colgate Brushless rinses off your face and razor in a flash. Leaves your face smooth, your skin refreshed, your morning disposition swell. Available in jars or tubes. Ask for Colgate Brushless Shave Cream tonight. Now, once again, Frank Sinatra.
Ladies and gentlemen, it was my pleasure tonight to pinch hit for Bill Stern, who's away on his vacation. Hope you're having fun, Bill. And he'll be gone for one more week, and I understand that next Friday night, Johnny Garfield is going to pinch hit for Bill. So may I, on behalf of Colgate Shave Cream, cordially invite you all to tune in next Friday evening, same time, same stations. Good night.
Thank you very much, Frank Sinatra, for a wonderful job. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, next week, same time, same stations, the distinguished star of motion pictures, John Garfield, pinch hits for Bill Stern.
Bill Stern, the Colgate Shave Cream man, is far away, for this is his vacation time to rest and play. And so next week, while he's away to take his place, we're glad to say we'll bring you Mr. John Garfield.
Frank Sinatra appeared on this program by arrangement with MGM, producers of Cynthia. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
The Colgate Sports Newsreel with Frank Sinatra, pinch hitting for Bill Stern.
Bill Stern, the Colgate Shave man, is far away, for this is his vacation time to rest and play. And for tonight, while he's away to take his place, we're glad to say is Frank Sinatra in person.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. For these 4 weeks, while Bill Stern is away on his vacation, Colgate Shave Cream is presenting four distinguished motion picture stars. Last week, it was Mr. John Garfield. Tonight, it's Frank Sinatra. Next Friday night, it'll be Mr. William Powell. And 2 weeks from tonight, Errol Flynn. Hence, for these weeks, while Bill is away on his vacation, four of the biggest stars in Hollywood will pinch hit for him. As they take over his role as America's foremost spinner of sports yarns, these stars will borrow their own favorite stories from Bill's pocketbook entitled My Favorite Sports Stories. Some stories that are true, some that are legends, some that are beyond belief, but all of them great yarns from that fascinating world of sports. And so, without further ado, here is tonight's guest star, pinch hitting for Bill Stern, Frank Sinatra.
Like Don said, my name's Frank Sinatra, though some people have called me The Voice. Perhaps you do or you don't know the story behind the story of my voice, but it really doesn't matter. Because tonight, while my friend Bill Stern is away, I'd like to tell you one of the many stories he's collected. It's the strange story behind another voice, a voice that has thrilled the world. And strangely enough, behind that voice is the story of a fighter, a sports story that changed a man's life. Quite a few years ago, a big, husky, happy-go-lucky youngster came out of Bakersfield, California, to join the United States Navy. This California youngster soon became one of the best heavyweight boxers in the United States Pacific Fleet. One day, long before World War II, the battleship this youngster was on anchored at the Japanese port of Nagasaki. And early the next morning, the youngster decided to go ashore and see a bit of Japan. But by mid-afternoon, he was pretty fed up with Japan and Japanese customs. It seemed that no matter what he wanted to do, there was always a grinning Japanese policeman to tell him, "Oh, so sorry, no can do." The California youngster became bored, decided to buy a cheap camera and take some pictures of the port of Nagasaki. However, no sooner had he started than a grinning Japanese policeman said, "Oh, so sorry, no can do," and tried to take his camera away. Well, sir, this was a little too much for the American, and a struggle ensued. And with one punch, he knocked the grinning Jap policeman down. Immediately, the Jap blew his whistle and other Japanese policemen came running from every direction. The California youngster decided to make a dash for freedom. With another well-aimed uppercut, another Jap hit the pavement, and the American boy was on his way, running full speed up the nearest street, looking for any American store he could find. Because he felt that if he could find an American store, it might give him some protection. Finally, he did see an American store. It was a phonograph shop. It advertised American phonograph records in the window. And the California youngster rushed in.
Hey, listen, buddy. You're an American, aren't you?
Why, yes, I am. I sell American phonographs and records. They're the best in the world.
Get in the sales talk. Look, I just smacked two Japanese policemen. Now, don't ask me why, I'll tell you later, but they're hot on my heels. Will you help a fellow American in distress and hide me?
Well, I don't
know. Listen, mister, I'm a sailor in the United States Navy. Will you please help me, but quick?
Well, okay, sailor. Get in that phonograph booth and play as many records as I give you. And don't come out till I tell you to. Now get in that booth and take these records and shut the door.
The California youngster took the phonograph records, went into the tiny phonograph booth, and began playing them. He couldn't be seen from the outside, and he thought he'd ducked the Japanese police until several of them came into the American phonograph store. The Japs wanted to know whether he had seen an American sailor, a big, rough, tough fellow, but he said...
Why, no, sir. There's no one here but a musician who's playing some opera selections, some operatic recordings.
Well, that satisfied the Japanese police. They listened to the sounds coming from the booth for a moment and realized that a hard-boiled American sailor surely wouldn't be interested in classical music. So they hurried down the street in wild pursuit. Well, sir, that's all there is to the simple story of an American sailor who saved himself from the Japanese police by staying in that phonograph booth listening to operatic selections all afternoon. And only when darkness fell did the California youngster venture back on the streets. But that 4.5 hours this California youngster had to remain in that phonograph booth listening to operatic records had a very curious effect. You see, it was the first time this boy had ever listened to serious music. And he liked it so much that he decided that when he left the Navy, music was to be his career. And he did make music his career. And there's the story. The story of a prize fighter who began his fighting in the United States Navy. But one day while in the Navy, he slugged 2 Japanese policemen. And to get away from them, he wound up listening to serious music in a phonograph booth. And he liked that music so well that he decided to study music. Well, I don't think he's ever been sorry. For even though a fistfight may have gotten him interested in music, he's done mighty well at it. Because today the whole world knows this famous fighter, this former fighter, as one of America's most famous opera stars, Lawrence Tibbett. But this brilliant career would never have started if Lawrence Tibbett hadn't felt handy with his fists.
Frank Sinatra will be back in a moment with more sports stories. But first, since we're speaking from Hollywood tonight, I know that here in Hollywood, there are a lot of fellows who complain about their shaves. Maybe you do yourself. All I know is there's a tremendous difference in shaving when you use Colgate Brushless Shaving Cream. It does what everyone wants, gives you a fast, clean, close shave without razor drag and scrape. And this proposition will prove it. Here it is. There's $1 cash says Colgate Brushless wins you in a flash. You'll go for it immediately. Here's why.
Because it's light and finer textured, Colgate Brushless completely surrounds, softens, and supports each bristle better than greasy, heavy creams. No matting down, no clogging. Your razor doesn't skid or skip when you use Colgate Brushless, but cuts through clean and smooth.
That lighter, finer texture makes Colgate Brushless Shaving Cream a super beard softener. You've never seen whiskers come off so slick or enjoyed a shave so smooth and comfortable. And it's economical to use, spreads easier and further. Try it. Get a large or giant-sized tuber jar of Colgate Brushless tomorrow. Use it a week. If you're not completely sold that it's the shave of shaves, return the carton top to Bill Stern, care of Colgate, Jersey City, New Jersey, and you'll get your dollar back pronto. Is it a deal? As $1 cash says, Colgate Brushless wins you in a flash. And now back to Frank Sinatra, who tonight is pinch-hitting for Bill Stern.
Ours is a great heritage, a land of freedom, and out of our way of life come strange success stories. I'd like to tell you such a story as Bill Stern heard it told out in the Middle West. He was out there to cover a football game, but the talk turned to baseball. And this is the way the story goes. It all began some years ago when a kid was growing up in a small Midwestern town. And like most American kids, he learned to play baseball. And like a good many kids, when he grew up, he needed money. He became good enough to play with his hometown ball team, and one summer he reported to a semi-pro team in hopes of pocketing a few dollars. He was young, but he was husky for his age, and he was fast in the field, had a powerful throwing arm, and he could belt a ball a country mile. The manager of the semi-pros watched him in practice one day, and later in the dressing room, he told the youngster,
I don't know where you learned to play ball, son, but stick around. You got the makings to play in the big league someday. By the way, what did you say your name was, boy?
The boy hesitated, and then said his name was Wilson. The manager wrote it down, and soon that name appeared in the lineup as an outfielder. And in no time at all, Wilson showed his wares. He quickly became one of the best outfielders in the league. He made few errors, and no rival base runner dared to stretch a hit on any ball that went into Wilson's territory. He was a ball player to watch, a fellow who seemed destined to make his mark in the big leagues before long. And then a strange thing happened. He made an important decision, a decision to give up his career in baseball. He packed his spike shoes and left the club. In a few weeks, the excitement died down, and Wilson's place in baseball was taken by another youngster. And soon, Wilson, the ball player, was completely forgotten. Wilson left the club about 36 years ago, and no one ever heard again of the promising Bush League player. No one heard of him, that is, until a short while ago, when the once-upon-a-time semi-pro outfielder turned up again and disclosed his long-forgotten baseball identity. You see, that ball player of long ago missed out on baseball glory, yet he found fame through his decision to take up another career, because in time he became one of the most famous Americans in history. For all the world now knows him as Dwight Eisenhower. You hear that song? You know its name? Sure, you know its name. The greatest song ever written about baseball. The imperishable Take Me Out to the Ball Game. During the baseball season, I'm sure you'll hear the song played and sung 1,001 times, because it's a tune that has all the color, all the swing, all the punch and feeling of the game. It's the theme song of a great nation's national pastime, a diamond hymn for free Americans. Yes, and there's a story behind the song, a very curious story. Many years ago, there was a famous songwriter and vaudeville star named Jack Norworth. The stage was his only passion and music his only outlet. He had no time for sports. His specialty was composing love songs and singing them to enthusiastic audiences. One day, Jack Norworth began playing around with a new tune, a tune that would express the meaning and romance of baseball. After all, he thought, there are famous football songs. Why not a song for baseball, too? But try as he would, Norworth couldn't seem to find a proper tune to fit the idea of baseball. The thought continued to haunt him day and night at home and away. Wherever he went, Jack Norworth heard the tune in his head. And then one night in 1906, as he sat alone in his room, it came out rather very clearly. The song was born, Take Me Out to the Ball Game. And the next day, it was a nervous Jack Norworth who tried out that new song in a theater audience. When his songs were about love, they had gone over very big. This song about baseball was something altogether different. He was afraid that the theater audience wouldn't quite like it. So hesitantly, he began to sing the first few bars. Take me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd. When he finished singing Take Me Out to the Ball Game, the audience went wild. They applauded and cheered and made him sing it again and again. The song was surely a hit. Take Me Out to the Ball Game became the most popular song in the country. People whistled it, sang it, and hummed it. It seemed to be a song that expressed all the excitement and color of baseball. The national pastime adopted the song as its own. It became its theme song, its national anthem. And that's the story of baseball's own anthem, a story that will burn in sports memory as long as our national pastime is played by free men in a free land. Oh, yes, there's just one more thing about the story of this imperishable song which you might be interested to know. It's the strangest part of the story, because, you see, Jack Norworth, the man who many years ago wrote Take Me Out to the Ball Game, never had ever seen a baseball game in his life. 'Cause it's 1, 2, 3 strikes you're out at the old ball. I'll be back in just a moment to tell you who's going to pinch hit for Bill Stern next week. But first, since we're broadcasting tonight from Hollywood, here is the best in the West, Don Stanley.
If you're looking for smooth, comfortable shaves, here's a proposition made to order for you. There's $1 cash says Colgate Brushless wins you in a flash. And here's why.
Because it's light and finer textured, Colgate Brushless completely surrounds, softens, and supports each bristle better than greasy, heavy creams. No matting down, no clogging. Your razor doesn't skid or skip when you use Colgate Brushless, but cuts through clean and smooth.
Give Colgate Brushless Shaving Cream a trial. See how this light, fine-textured cream does away with razor scrape, gives you really smooth, clean, comfortable shaves. Get a large or giant-sized tuber jar of Colgate Brushless tomorrow.
Remember, if 1 week's use doesn't convince you it's the shave of shaves, send us the carton top, and we'll mail you $1 at once. Address Bill Stern, care of Colgate, Jersey City 2, New Jersey. How about it? There's $1 cash says Colgate Brushless wins you in a flash. And now back to Frank Sinatra.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's been a great pleasure for me to pinch hit for Bill Stern tonight. I generally listen to him telling his stories of fact or of legend from the world of sports each Friday night, so naturally I got quite a bang out of taking his place tonight. Next week, to spin these yarns, will come a guy who's got a great chance in motion pictures, name of William Powell. And that I got to hear. And I hope you'll be listening, too. Before I say goodnight, I want to thank Bill Stern for asking me to pinch hit for him. And now, if you'll just come over to the hit parade to knock down a small song, why, we'll be even. Good night.
Next Friday night, another great motion picture star will be pinch hitting for your sports story spinner, Bill Stern. For as Frank Sinatra told you, next Friday night, it'll be William Powell. Be sure to listen next Friday evening, same time, same stations, when William Powell pinch hits for Bill Stern.
Bill Stern, the Colgate-shaped cream man, is far away, for this is his vacation time to rest and play. And for next week, when he's away to take his place, we're glad to say we'll bring you Mr. William Powell. C-O-L-G-A-T-E.
Frank Sinatra appeared on this program tonight by arrangement with MGM, producers of Irving Berlin's Technicolor musical Easter Parade, starring Judy Garland and Fred Astaire. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
The Colgate Sports Newsreel with Frank Sinatra, pinch hitting for Bill Stern.
Bill Stern, the Colgate Chief Man, is far away, for this is his vacation time to rest and play. And for the night when he's away to take his place, we're glad to say it's Frank Sinatra in person.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. For these weeks, while Bill Stern is away on his vacation, Colgate Shave Cream is presenting district and picture stars in his place. Last week, it was Mr. William Powell. Tonight, it's Frank Sinatra. Next Friday night, Pat O'Brien. 2 weeks from tonight, Ronald Reagan. So, while Bill is away on his vacation, four of the biggest stars in Hollywood will pinch hit for him. As they take over his role as America's foremost spinner of sports yarns, these stars will borrow their own favorite tales from Bill's pocketbook entitled My Favorite Sports Stories, all great yarns from the world of sports. And so, here is tonight's guest star, pinch hitting for Bill Stern, Frank Sinatra.
As Bob Warren said, my name is Frank Sinatra. I make a living as a singer and an actor, but I like sports above all else, and that's why recently I had a wonderful time making a picture called Take Me Out to the Ball Game. You know, take me out to the ball game, take me out with the crowd. Say, that's a great song, the greatest ever written about baseball, the imperishable Take Me Out to the Ball Game. In the picture of the same name, I played the part of an infielder in a great double play combination. And they wrote a song about our trio, too, from O'Brien to Ryan to Goldberg. My, what a great infield combination we were in pictures. But in the real world of baseball, the greatest infield combination was Tinkers to Evers to Chance. That combination consisted of little Johnny Evers playing second base, Joe Tinker at shortstop, and at first base, big Frank Chance. Each of these was a brilliant star in his own right. Yet they seemed to operate with but a single mind. And the team they played with, the Chicago Cubs, won four National League pennants and two World Series championships. These three great infielders, Tinker, Evers, and Chance, captured the public's imagination as no other group of ballplayers ever did. Everywhere you went, when they were in their heyday, you would hear the baseball fans shouting about Tinker to Evers to Chance. And yet there was a strange and foreboding manner about each of these great players. While fame had blessed this great combination, tough luck and tragedy seemed to dog them. Frank Chance, the peerless first baseman, was the first to feel the scorn of the jinx. Late in his playing career, he was beamed by a pitch ball. He was never the same man again. For years after, he suffered anguish and headaches, and then he became a victim of tuberculosis and died in horrible torture. Neither could Johnny Evers, the brilliant second baseman, escape the jinx. When the peppery little infielder left baseball, he had a fortune of more than $200,000, but he soon lost all of it. Then he suffered a stroke that paralyzed his right arm and leg. For years, Evers remained a helpless invalid, sentenced to a wheelchair until death finally released him. The jinx had struck down two teammates, and that left only Joe Tinker, the bandy-legged shortstop. However, when Joe Tinker left baseball, he seemed to be headed for fortune and happiness. He ran his baseball earnings into a fortune of more than $100,000. But suddenly, his savings were swept away. His first wife died, and so did his second. The twilight years weren't easy for Joe Tinker. He had many serious illnesses, and what's more, one of his legs were amputated to save his life. But even this didn't end the jinx, because he died on his 68th birthday, tortured man. And so that's the story of baseball's greatest double play combination, Tinker to Evers to Chance. A trio which made baseball history only to be jinxed for the rest of their lives. But what you may not know is that this great baseball trio of Tinker to Evers to Chance, even while making baseball history, never spoke to each other.
Frank Sinatra will be back in a moment with more sports stories, but first...
You fellows who have trouble with your shaves, what's your problem? Tough beard, tender skin? Whatever it is, you'll find Colgate Brushless Shaving Cream is the answer. You've never known a shave so smooth, clean, and easy, or one that left your face feeling so comfortable. Prove it to yourself on this great proposition. There's $1 cash says Colgate Brushless wins you in a flash. With your first shave, you'll notice this.
Because it's light and fine textured, Colgate Brushless completely surrounds, softens, and supports each bristle. Better than greasy, heavy cream, your razor doesn't skid or skip when you use Colgate Brushless, but cuts through clean and smooth.
Yes, sir, even the toughest whiskers soften up fast with that light, fine textured Colgate Brushless Shaving Cream. Your razor sweeps the bristles off close and clean with no scraping or snagging. You get a shave that looks great and feels swell. You get a large, giant-sized tube or jar of Colgate Brushless and use it 1 week. If you're not convinced it's the ideal shave, send us the carton top and you'll get your dollar quick. Address Bill Stern, care of Colgate, Jersey City 2, New Jersey. Is it a deal? There's $1 cash says Colgate Brushless wins you in a flash. Try it tomorrow.
And now back to Frank Sinatra, who tonight is pinch-hitting for Bill Stern.
There are many strange stories told by Bill Stern in his book entitled My Favorite Sports Stories, and I was reminded of one of these when I played in a picture called The Kissing Bandit. You see, this story concerns a Mexican bandit named Pancho Villa and a prize fighter named Harvey Thorpe. Harvey Thorpe was a pretty good fighter some years ago, but he never went very far because he preferred farming to fighting. And at just about the time that he was coming to the top of his division, Harvey Thorpe bought himself a farm in Kansas and retired from the ring. That is, he thought he had retired from the ring, but he was mistaken. Because no sooner had he retired to his farm than Harvey Thorpe's former manager came to him excitedly and told him,
Harv, I got the break of a lifetime for you. We can get $8,000 for a fight in Mexico.
Gosh, that's a lot of money.
Oh, you gotta do it, Harvey. You gotta. Think what you can buy for your farm with
$8,000. Yeah, I guess you're right. Okay, I'll take the fight.
It was a hot, scorching day when Harvey Thorpe stepped into the ring in Juarez before a mob of wild and shouting Mexican fight fans. And as the battle began, Harvey Thorpe discovered that the other man in the ring was to prove an exceedingly tough nut to crack. For 15 rounds, Harvey Thorpe took a savage beating, but giving as much as he got. Just as the decision was going to be announced, a frightened cry went up from hundreds of throats in the arena. And then in a great cloud of dust, a large band of streaking men on horseback swept into the arena. It was a guerrilla raid on Juarez, and it was led by none other than the most feared bandit of all, Pancho Villa. The spectators rose for the exit, but Harvey Thorpe ducked under the ring. A moment later, the bandit, Pancho Villa, rode up to the ring on his white horse and ordered Harvey Thorpe, the fighter, to come out from under the ring.
Who are you, gringo?
My name's Thorpe. I'm a fighter. I came here from my country to fight the Mexican champion for $8,000.
Then let me see you fight, Americano. And I, Pancho Villa, will watch you fight. If you want to get paid, my friend, see to it that you fight well.
The two fighters climbed back into the ring, weary and sore after 15 rounds of hard fighting. They went at each other again. 5, 10, 15 more rounds they fought as furiously as before. And whenever the pace slowed down, the bandits at the ringside fired their pistols to speed up the action. Finally, after 20 rounds, the fight was stopped, and Harvey Thorpe, the American, was declared the winner. Pancho Villa arose from his place at the ringside, bowed gracefully to Harvey Thorpe, and said to him,
Hey, you are one good fighter, but I have not stolen any money today, so... instead, I will give you this.
As he said this, Pancho Villa tossed the bag into the ring and, jumping on his horse, shouted as he rode away,
You are magnifico, Americano! Adios, amigos!
No sooner was the dreaded Pancho Villa out of sight than Harvey Thorpe scooped up the bag at his feet and tore it open. There was no gold in the bag. Harvey looked at its contents in dismay. Instead of money in the bag, there were hundreds of plain Mexican beans. Thousands of them. For 35 grueling rounds under the sun, Harvey Thorpe had been paid off with a bag of beans. It was a sad and crestfallen Harvey Thorpe who made his way back to his farm in Kansas. He was finished with the ring for good. Nobody would ever get him into that squared circle again. He had learned his lesson. But wait, the story doesn't end here. Several years after the fight at Juarez, Pancho Villa was shot down and killed. His funeral was a thing of beauty and pomp. And among the many wreaths and sumptuous floral offerings was a lovely cluster of bean blossoms sent by some unknown admirer from far-off Kansas to the dashing, gallant bandit leader of Mexico. With the floral offering was a note which read, "I've got 200 acres of beans planted already. They grow like wildfire up here, too. You, too, were magnificent. Adios, amigo." I'm getting a big kick out of pinch hitting for Bill Stern tonight, and I hope you're enjoying it, too. But you know, all the stories I've told you so far have been about famous in the world of sports. However, let me tell you just one more story of a man who was a sports failure. And yet, he too created an unforgettable story. At prep school, this boy, when he tried out for the school baseball team, failed. So he swallowed his pride and his ambition to become a baseball star, and instead, he became the team's manager and water boy. And he tried out for the football team, and again, he failed to make the team. He tried out for the college crew, and once more, he failed. However, as the years went by, he became a fine swimmer. But even his swimming ability brought him failure instead of success. Because one day, after swimming in very icy water, he became ill. And that illness left him shattered physically. But strangely enough, in his failure, that man found a great success. Because of all the men who came to seek fame in Washington, D.C., he created the most incredible success story in the political history of our nation. And surely by now, you must know the name of this once-upon-a-time sports failure we're talking about. His favorite song was, "Where seldom is heard a discouraging word." For his name was Franklin Delano Roosevelt. "And the skies are not cloudy, oh." I'll be back in just a moment to tell you who is going to pinch hit for Bill Stern next week. But first, since we're broadcasting tonight from New York, here's Bob Warren.
Why wait to try Colgate Brushless Shaving Cream? You can't lose on this swell proposition. There's $1 cash says Colgate Brushless wins you in a flash. Yes, sir, $1 says it's the sweet, smooth, comfortable shave you want. And here's why. Because it's light and fine textured, Colgate Brushless completely surrounds, softens, and supports each bristle. Better than greasy, heavy creams. No matting down, no clogging. Your razor doesn't skid or skip when you use Colgate Brushless, but cuts through clean and smooth.
Right, Colgate Brushless gets tough whiskers so soft they don't fight the razor. Once over and your beard's off, close and clean with no scraping or aftershave tenderness. Try Colgate Brushless and see.
Tomorrow, buy a large or giant-sized two-bar jar of Colgate Brushless Shaving Cream. Use it a week. Then if you're not 100% sold, mail the carton top to Bill Stern, care of Colgate, Jersey City 2, New Jersey, and you'll get $1 pronto. You've nothing to lose, everything to gain. There's $1 cash says Colgate Brushless wins you in a flash.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's been a great pleasure for me to pinch hit for Bill Stern tonight. I generally listen to him telling his stories from the world of sports each Friday night, and tonight I got quite a banger to take in his place. Next week to spin these yarns will come a guy who's got a great chance in pictures named Pat O'Brien. That I'm going to hear, and I hope you'll be listening too. Before I say goodnight, I'd like to thank Bill for asking me to pinch hit for him, and if he'll just sing a tune for me in one of my pictures, we'll be even. Good night, everybody.
Next Friday night, another great motion picture star will be pinch hitting for Bill Stern. Or, as Frank Sinatra told you, next Friday night, it'll be the famous star, Pat O'Brien. So be sure to listen next Friday evening, same time, same station, when Pat O'Brien pinch hits for Bill Stern.
Bill Stern, the Colgate Shave Cream Man, is far away. For this is his vacation time to rest and play. Before next week, when he's away to take his place, we're glad to say we'll bring you Mr. Pat O'Brien. C-O-L-G-A-T-E.
Frank Sinatra appeared on this program tonight by arrangement with Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, producers of Any Number Can Play, starring Clark Gable. The Bill Stern Show tonight came from New York. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
Frank Sinatra, pinch hit sportscaster for Bill Stern over NBC Radio on August 1, 1947, July 9, 1948, and July 15, 1949, selling a whole lot of shave cream. That concludes this week's broadcast of Echoes of a Century. This program was an independent production by Doll Shoe Radio Creations, copyright 2006. Produced in the studios of WLSU La Crosse, an affiliate of Wisconsin Public Radio, on the La Crosse campus of the University of Wisconsin. I'm King David McKenzie. Thanks for listening. I hope that you'll join us again at the same time next week. Until then, remember, fear and God do not inhabit the same space.